From WIPR in Baltimore, I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, a look at why a West Baltimore development project has been stalled for more than a decade. Harbor East, Port Covington, Remington, Canton, and other neighborhoods have all seen surges in development and new interest in recent years. But efforts to revitalize State Center at the corner of Martin Luther King Boulevard and Howard Street are at a standstill. There have been multiple public hearings, plenty of community buy-in, and approvals at various stages by various state agencies. The state has signed contracts with the developers, but it's nowhere near getting started. Coming up on Midday, the saga of State Center. 10 years, three governors, $26 million, and nothing to show for it. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick heads into the woods for her weekly theater review. Midday, we'll be shovel-ready right after the news. And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. State Center, the office complex at the corner of Howard Street and Martin Luther King Boulevard in West Baltimore, houses various state agencies. It was built more than 50 years ago, and people who work in there and manage the buildings agree that they are all in serious disrepair. They've agreed about that for a long time. 10 years ago, developers were asked by the Ehrlich administration to suggest a plan to upgrade and revitalize the state offices in a way that would also revitalize the surrounding West Baltimore neighborhoods. Governor Ehrlich got the ball rolling, and Martin O'Malley kept it spinning, but it's been rolling very slowly, and it has encountered more than a few bumps. $26 million later, many public hearings and multiple approvals at various stages by various state agencies, and the project is shovel-ready. The Hogan administration, however, is not. Last month, the Board of Public Works, including Governor Hogan and Democrats Peter Francho and Nancy Kopp, voted to kill the State Center project as currently planned. They say they will look for alternatives to the plan that's been in the works for more than a decade. So this afternoon, we'll explore some of the reasons why the State Center project is on hold. I'm joined in the studio today by Caroline Moore. She's the CEO of Acoustix, the developer that's been working on this project since 2005. John Kyle is here as well. He's a resident of Bolton Hill, one of the neighborhoods that is adjacent to the State Center complex, and the president of the State Center Neighborhood Alliance. We're also joined by Natalie Sherman, who covers real estate and economic development for the Baltimore Sun. Welcome to you all. Thanks for being here. Happy New Year.
Thanks for having us.
Same to you.
And we will also hear a little bit later today from Doug Mayer, the communications director for Governor Hogan. I spoke with him earlier this morning. We'd love to hear your thoughts on what the state and the city of Baltimore should do with State Center. Our number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. And if you want to send us a tweet, our handle is @MiddayTomHall. So, Caroline Moore, explain to us what the project that you all have been working on consists of. What would State Center look like were you to build the plan that you've suggested over these past 10 years?
Well, first of all, State Center is a major employment center. It's the largest concentration of state agencies in Maryland. Over 3,000 employees work there. And the vision that the state laid out, which was what attracted us to this development, so they laid out a vision of connecting these nine neighborhoods around a very transit-rich node of metro, light rail, bus lines, few blocks away from Amtrak, Martin Luther King shoveling thousands of cars up every day, and to make this a connector of these desperate and disparate neighborhoods, to have a new town center with a new Main Street, the grocery store that's in the middle of a food desert with neighborhood amenities, and bringing economic opportunity to neighborhoods that haven't seen investment in a generation, and to have this bustling, vibrant, mixed-use development.
So right now it's only used essentially by people who work for the state of Maryland. You're talking about expanding the complex. It's about 28 acres, is that right?
It is. It's 28 acres. And it is a major employment center, but it is also a concrete wasteland. It's an asphalt jungle of obsolete buildings that do nothing and actually detract from the neighborhoods and the cultural arts district of which it is the centerpiece of.
But you're talking about having not just state employees work there. You're talking about having maybe private offices. You mentioned a grocery store, restaurants, shops, that kind of thing.
The state would not diminish their occupancy there. They would keep their commitment to have those jobs in the city of Baltimore. But they would be enhanced by private, as you said, Tom, private office, ground floor retail connecting the MARC metro line to the light rail, and a mix of housing. And most importantly, a centerpiece, which is a grocery store.
What would it cost to build it?
Well, the first phase was about $200 million. Over the course of 15-year build-out, it could be as much as $1 billion, $1.5 billion, depending on the density that we could build there. We have an agreed plan unit development, which is a zoning overlay layer that says exactly how many houses, how much office, how much retail can be built. So if we built out to the maximum capacity, it would be about $1.5 billion over 15 years.
And how much of that would the state pay?
The state pays nothing. It's entirely private investment. When phase one was first conceived, the state wanted to build a garage, and they wanted to own it, and they wanted to manage it. They wanted it to be there for their state employees to be able to park there, continue to park there for free. We wanted to own the garage. It's an important part, important asset of the project, but the state wanted to do it. When the Hogan administration came in, one of the first things that they asked us was, can you privatize the garage? We said, absolutely. We'd love to privatize the garage. So in privatizing the garage, which was something we agreed to 2 years ago, there would be not $1 of state investment in State Center.
But it would cost the state something to maintain it, because they would rent the offices from you.
We would maintain it, but the state would be renting offices. And in the first phase, the state was renting about 500,000 square feet of space, four different agencies renting in two different buildings that the state picked. The state said, we want this to be our phase one, either end of the project to anchor it. We want these four agencies to be the agencies there. And here are the exact specifications we want you to build to for these offices. And we facilitated that budget, and the state, with a bevy of consultants around them, negotiated a rent that would cover the debt service on their space.
And the critics of the plan say that the rents are too high, that that the state could get a much better deal were they to locate someplace else.
The rents are exactly the amount it takes to cover the debt service on the space that the state specifically, technically specified, and not a dollar more. And on top of that, what I really want to emphasize here is that this is the best deal the state could do anywhere, because they own the property and they will continue to own the property after the development is completed, after the ground lease expires. They collect a ground lease payment. They have a 7% profit share on everything that's done on that property. Public, if it's a public lease or a private lease or a grocery store retail, it's 100%, 7% of the profits go to the state. And on top of all that, they're not paying $1 in taxes, state or city taxes now, and it goes from zero taxes to 100% private investment taxes.
John Kyle, you head a coalition of neighborhoods that surround the State Center complex, you all have been involved in this process pretty much from the beginning.
Absolutely from the beginning. The neighborhoods helped to select the developer. The state brought neighborhood residents in to figure out what we're going to do next, including hearing what the various proposed developers wanted to do. So we've been involved before the development team was involved.
And you all like the plan that Ms. Moore and her development company have proposed?
We like the plan. We think maybe there are better things to do, but we have been shaping this plan for 10 years. When the developers have come up with an idea we didn't like, we've told them about it. And often that changed the plan in the way that we asked for it. We think that overall the project is an excellent one, in that it brings together nine neighborhoods. For 10 years, these nine disparate neighborhoods have stood together. It's not many opportunities across the city where you see various local, usually very parochial neighborhood groups standing together, working together, compromising together, figuring out what is best for all of us as a whole not just one of us and leaving the other eight behind.
Given the action of the Board of Public Works a couple of weeks ago, late December, it does not appear that the development as currently planned is going to be made. It appears that the governor is going to, you know, go off in a different direction, have a different take, find some people to have a different take on it. What's your reaction to the perceived lack of urgency about this? Because if we start from scratch again, if the governor is, you know, going to start getting ideas for new uses or new ways of developing this parcel, that could be 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, Lord knows how long it would take to build. How do you all feel about that?
I don't think that I can say all the words I'd like to on your public air. It's shocking. It's disappointing. It's ridiculous, you know, that they have invested all of this time with us, you know, that they don't have a contract with us. They have a moral obligation, however, with us because we are voters and residents. And they have just chosen to ignore us, not brought us in for the discussion. We have specifically asked to be part of the discussions and haven't even had those requests acknowledged, much less honored.
All right, here's Doug Mayer, the communications director for Governor Hogan. I asked him earlier this morning when we spoke why the governor wants to stop this project.
From the day the governor took office up until 2 weeks ago and then through today, the governor has and the administration has been 100% committed to redeveloping the State Center site. That has never changed. The developers who are attempting to, you know, take taxpayer dollars, that's what they want you to believe, but it's not correct. The governor, the state, 100% committed to redeveloping this site.
Natalie Sherman, you cover development in the city. You cover development throughout the state. The Board of Public Works, there's this perception that this is another instance in which Governor Hogan is dissing the city of Baltimore. He canceled the Red Line. There was $900 million of federal money available at that, you know, to begin that project, which many people thought was shovel ready, as they say. This project, the developers had said that had it been approved, they could have started breaking ground in 2 months. Are you finding that a lot of people are saying this, and the cost of the Red Line would have been about $3 billion of economic activity, another $1.2 or $1.5 billion for a state center? People are pointing to that's $4.5 billion that Governor Hogan is taking out of the city of Baltimore. Are you hearing that from folks on the street?
I have heard that from people. I do think that the politics of this is something that the governor is very aware of. And the statement that you just aired sort of speaks to that. They want to be clear that he's committed to developing the property without a plan. I think there are a lot of questions about that without sort of a specific, and here's what I'm going to do, and here's the money.
They weren't specific. They did say that they would form a commission or a group. They authorized the Stadium Authority to look into some other uses. Generally speaking, what's the time frame on a process like that? This time frame is 10 years plus. If that were to happen, would we expect that this time frame would be similar?
Studies take a long time, is my observation. I think it depends on the study, it depends on the political will, et cetera. But for example, the studies for a new convention center have been around for many years and never resulted in anything. And I think the Stadium Authority over the summer sort of said that they were going to look at a convention center, and I don't even know if the RFP has gone out yet.
Speaking of politics, I asked Doug Mayer about that, about the fact that, you know, that there was this notion that Baltimore was being ignored. He, of course, denied that was the case. But he did himself bring up politics.
Because I'm sure the developer is going to come on your show. She's going to paint this as, you know, some kind of, you know, thing that the governor did. But this was the comptroller, who's a Democrat, and the treasurer, who's a Democrat as well. So the real story is not that the comptroller and the governor were skeptical of this bad deal. It's the fact that the treasurer, who was elected by the Democratic General Assembly, was also incredibly skeptical of this deal.
Did you have, Caroline Moore, any notion, for example, while Governor Hogan was running for office, that this was something he was going to do? There certainly was a notion that he wasn't a big fan of the red line while he was campaigning. But you started with the Ehrlich administration, you went through the O'Malley administration. As you saw the Hogan administration come into office, did they give you any signals that this was something that they weren't going to do? He's been in office for 2 years now. And in these 2 years of the Hogan era, what's happened with this?
I really thought that this was a bipartisan project, that it was a project conceived under a Republican. It was privatizing a public liability. It was using private investment to deal with a public nuisance. So I really thought it would be immune to politics.
Caroline Moore is a founding partner and CEO of Acoustix, the real estate development company that's trying to develop State Center. Natalie Sherman covers real estate and economic development for the Baltimore Sun. John Kyle is the president of the State Center Neighborhood Alliance. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we are more than happy to entertain your thoughts, your questions, your comments about State Center and the development down there off of MLK Boulevard. 410-662-8780 is our phone number. Midday at WIPR.org is our email address. You want to drop us a tweet? We're at Midday Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
You're tuned to Midday with Tom Hall on your public radio. This is member supported 881 WYPR.
Thanks, Matt. This is Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up later today, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will be here with her weekly theater review. She'll tell us about Into the Woods, the great Stephen Sondheim musical, which is at the Kennedy Center this weekend. And coming up tomorrow, it's the Midday Monthly Movie Mayhem with our movie mavens Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival and Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post. So if you've just joined us today, we're talking about the stalled State Center redevelopment project. State Center is at the corner of Howard Street and Martin Luther King Boulevard on Baltimore's West Side. My guests are Caroline Moore, the CEO of Acoustix, the real estate development company that's trying to develop State Center. Natalie Sherman is here. She covers real estate and economic development for the Baltimore Sun. And John Kyle. He's the president of the State Center Neighborhood Alliance. We welcome your comments and thoughts about what, if anything, you think should be done with State Center and that area of West Baltimore. Let's go to the phones. Janet in West Baltimore, you're evidently a person who lives kind of near State Center. Thanks for your call. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you very much. I believe that the governor should go ahead with this project. The community surrounding State Center, you look at Martin Luther King and Howard, Westwood, they haven't had any development in probably about 10 to 15 years. There's not been any shovels to the ground, whereas most communities around Baltimore, they've had development. They've had so much development, they're saying stop. But this community is saying, please, give us some development. And we in the community shouldn't have to wait another 10 years when there's a project, a great project, that's shovel-ready to go, and that the community needs this project and wants it. It's going to bring jobs to the community. It's going to bring a new development to the community and give that community that shot in the arm, that investment that it needs. That community has been divested in so long, and it's time to invest in Baltimore West. It's past time.
Well, Janet, thank you for your call. Let me play you a little clip of Doug Mayer, the communications director for the governor, with whom I spoke this morning.
The governor has directed the Maryland Stadium Authority to conduct a feasibility study for all possible uses. No one is going to stop the governor, the comptroller, Mayor Pugh, Council President Jack Young, from redeveloping this site, especially not a group of people whose only goal and aim seems to be lining their own pockets with taxpayer dollars.
So, Caroline Moore, your response. I mean, the governor's office is saying that, you know, this is a money grab by a private development company.
This is back in 2005 when the state first conceived of this vision and really we grabbed hold of it and thought this was a fabulous thing. It was in our backyard. We really wanted to be a part of it. It was because we were going to make a difference to Baltimore. All of these investors that have spent all of their time and resources and money in this project are doing it because they believe in Baltimore. They're developers. They want to do their trade. And yes, we want to make a profit, but there's risk. It's making a new market. Bringing office, retail, housing, a grocery store to an area that hasn't had investment in a generation is not a slam dunk deal. It has its inherent risks, and we were willing to take those risks.
And John Kyle, you're indicating that the governor's office and the administration has not been particularly receptive to your overtures and to requests to meet and that kind of stuff. Was that different in prior administrations? Did you work pretty closely with the O'Malley and the Ehrlich administration?
Absolutely. You know, the 8 years of the O'Malley administration, I wasn't meeting with the governor, but the alliance was meeting with officials in various departments of the state in order to make this project go. It wasn't that we were aligned with the developer. We were aligned with the project, and the project was the developer and the state. And we as residents were pushing both of them to do the best project possible. Your spokesman from the governor talks about, you know, nothing will stop them. Their own delays are what's stopping this. You know, that we don't need another study. You know, maybe there are tweaks to be made. Maybe there's even a change in who the developer is. I understand that. This is a new administration. But for 2 years, they've sat on their hands, as far as I can tell. They've never reached out to us, and there's no public comment or no public plan, and now they're referring it for a study. They could have studied it for the past 2 years.
Here's Doug Mayer again from a conversation we had, as I said, about 9:30 this morning.
We have been attempting to negotiate with this handpicked developer to no avail. We even went to mediation with a judge. That went on for months. Unfortunately, this developer refuses to take anything but what was previously offered by the former governor, which has now been determined would jeopardize the state's debt ceiling.
And Natalie Sherman, this is at the core of the governor's opposition to this program, the notion of debt affordability or the debt ceiling. And it's evidently something that Treasurer Nancy Kopp has agreed with the governor on. And it has to do with whether the leases that the state offices would be under are classified as capital leases or not. So if they're not a capital lease, they're something else. Is that a normal thing? Is that something you ever write about? I mean,
that is something that I'm aware of because of this project, and not it's a question. And I think even the treasurer during the Board of Public Works hearing sort of raised some questions about, you know, are you using accounting standards to classify this as an operating lease, and it was sort of a real estate calculation. I'm not an expert. I do not know how to judge.
But Caroline Moore, I mean, your understanding is that this would not affect the debt ceiling and the debt, the cost of borrowing money. And the governor is saying that were this project to go forward, it would jeopardize the very good AAA bond rating that the state of Maryland enjoys. But why do you say that that's not the case?
All of these tests were done in 2009 and 2010, and they came back unequivocally operating leases. And we have stuck to those same economic terms from 2009. Not a thing has changed. This is an excuse and not a reason. And it's the wrong conclusion.
And who's to say that Nancy Kopp, the treasurer, has come to the wrong conclusion? I mean, how does one decide that? How's a person listening to this program supposed to know what conclusion you're supposed to come to?
That's a very good question. I think it's a red herring issue that the administration's using to renege on their contracts.
Let's go to the phones again. Dan in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Natalie Sherman, Caroline Moore, and John Kyle. Thanks for your call.
Thank you for taking the call. As a resident who has watched this project from the beginning, I kind of welcome the governor's action here. Why? Because this is a project typified by mission creep and credibility issues. Mission creep is that a very experienced developer was substituted with a very inexperienced developer. That's number one. Number two, the issue of community support. Well, follow the money. A lot of money was spent in organizing a previously unorganized community, and they created community support. And number three, if you look at the liability for the project, it all rests on the taxpayer. So from those viewpoints, I really welcome the governor's action to relook at this and to restudy it. I don't think the project was anything more than political pork, and I think we've got to look at that very closely.
Well, Dan, thank you for your call. So, John and Kyle, how else do you have community support if you don't create it, if you don't let people know what's going on? I wonder, is there an alternative there?
I'm shocked at Dan's comment. You know, the follow the money, nobody created us. You know, these are nine established communities with nine established community organizations already working in these neighborhoods before this project. That's why we were so interested in it. Governor Ehrlich invited us in before there was a team leader, before there was a developer. We chose, in order to organize ourselves better, to create and incorporate the alliance so that we had a footing on equal par with other incorporated bodies, including the developer. And we have put in the time, energy, and effort over 10 years. One of my colleagues was saying when this project started, I was a brunette, and now I'm, you know, a gray-haired old man. This has been going on for more than 10 years. This is something that these neighborhoods have, we are suffering through the existing project establishment of the State Center campus, and we view this as an opportunity to get what the communities needed, from jobs to housing to amenities, to a 24/7 lively neighborhood 7 days a week. On the community support side, the communities created the support. No one came and did it to us. If so, why did I have so many sleepless nights and many night meetings to try and make this happen?
So, Natalie Sherman, that's one of the things that, Ms. Moore's company and the Neighborhood Association has pointed to, that particular area, the way it's developed now, the way it sits now, it's busy between 9 and 5 when people are, 8 and 5 when people are at work. But at night, it's really desolate. I mean, and it's dangerous to walk around there, and it's just not welcoming, and there's no activity going. Does this, you know, given your overview of the kind of development that's been taking place here in Baltimore and around the state, does this appear to you to be an opportunity to really revitalize the neighborhoods in addition to doing whatever the state needs to do to house their workers?
Well, I do think you've seen a real push, at least in Baltimore City, towards sort of mixed-use development and trying to get retail on the ground floor and in downtown. You know, there are more residents living in apartment buildings, and that's not to say there aren't offices. If you look at some of the newest development projects that have been proposed, Harbor Point, Harbor East, Port Covington, they all sort of follow the mixed-use model. So I do think there's been a shift from a real estate perspective of kind of what developers think is the right way to develop.
So State properties. Center is in line with the kinds of recent development that we've had in places, as you mentioned, Harbor East, Port Covington, that kind of thing. Caroline Moore, this has been bogged down for a number of reasons. Lawsuits not at all at the bottom of the list. There was a lawsuit brought by a group that seemed to be led by Peter Angelos and based on with a consortium of people from downtown businesses. They were apparently concerned that the state offices were going to stay where they are, and they thought this was an opportunity to move them downtown. That lawsuit was resolved. It went to a court of appeals, and you won that lawsuit, and the state was on your side during that lawsuit. But that was during the O'Malley administration, right? So that was then. This is now.
I would rather say that we were on the state side. The state was sued because their process was questioned as to how they awarded the project to this development team. We signed a joint defense agreement with the state, fought for 3.5 years, all the way through to the highest court in the land, the Court of Appeals, had a unanimous decision, so long it deserved a table of contents, very thorough, and we won the right to do the project, only to have the state decide they didn't want to do the project.
I asked Doug Mayer this morning if there were plans to move state offices out of the current complex, regardless of how it's developed, into other places in the city. This is what he had to say.
I'm not aware of any plan about that. What the governor ordered the other day was a feasibility study, right? See the possible uses for this site. And that's where we are right now.
So, John Kyle, I mean, it doesn't appear that, the governor is, at least at this stage, thinking about relocating the state offices so that there will be those jobs eventually, I mean, when this thing does get done. Your reaction to Mr. Mayer's comment?
It still leaves a vast number of questions. You know, is it going to be this current number of state employees, or is it going to be an enhanced number of employees because there will be private employers lured to that site? Will the redevelopment include private investment? Will include amenities? And we don't know that. And, you know, and although the arena idea may be a red herring and may not be something that anybody really thinks seriously about, that's what got the news. That's what a third member of the Board of Public Works mentioned in particular. And that would be one of the worst ideas because it would just create further walls between West Baltimore and the rest of the city.
So Natalie Sherman, John Kyle is referring to Peter Francho, the comptroller, who at the Board of Public Works said, why don't we think about building a stadium on that, or some sort of arena, rather, not stadium, I suppose, or arena on that parcel of land. That got some fairly immediate reaction from a number of folks. How do you think that idea is flying, at least in this initial stage?
I think there's a lot of skepticism about the arena project in general. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about the need for a new arena. The current one is old and sort of patched together, but is very profitable. And so people say, why would this be a priority for the city, given the convention center and the court system building, which also has its own problems? So there is also a question of, like, what sports team would come to fill the arena. And there's been a lot of doubts about that.
And so, Caroline Moore, where do things stand from your point of view at this point? I mean, right now, after the Board of Public Works, it seems like the governor said, this ain't happening. We're going in a different direction. What's your posture at this juncture?
We're going to continue to fight for this project and to try to see it through to fruition. We've been at it a long time. We've made a commitment. We've signed community benefit agreements and economic inclusion plans. We have a stack of documents with the state a mile high. And we're going to fight for West Baltimore communities, for Midtown, to see this project through. It's the right thing to happen. It's 10 years in the making, and it's time has come.
Let's go back to the phones. Linda in Baltimore, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Hi. Yeah, my question and concern has changed completely since I've been listening for a while. Initially, I was going to ask a little bit more for clarity on what the so-called use of state dollars was and how it was going to wreck the credit rating and so forth. But now all I can think of is how terribly sad it is that the nine communities have spent 10 years working on this, and it is so rare for communities across different lines to work together in Baltimore, especially with all that's gone on in West Baltimore these past couple of years and the whole, I'm not even going to mention, we all know what that is, and I'm just really sad to see this situation, and now that the communities don't seem to be part of whatever is going forward. It's a huge mistake and another huge blow to Baltimore to, you know, just up and say we're going in a different direction and start another 10-year process that's going to go probably nowhere.
Well, Linda, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Jack Young, the president of the Baltimore City Council, basically said the other day that if the governor wants to change his mind and do something different than the prior two governors, that's his prerogative. He can do it. They'll work with him. Catherine Pugh, the new mayor of Baltimore, was certainly very supportive of your idea, very supportive of the plan as you all have developed it, but has said, you know, we're going to still try to do something there. When we move forward on a thing like this, I mean, elections have consequences. People voted for Larry Hogan to be the governor. They did not vote for Martin O'Malley's lieutenant governor to become the governor. Did your investors take that into consideration, Caroline Moore, when they were making a commitment to this project? I mean, this is a project done in the political arena. It's not done in the private arena completely.
Our investors believe that we're better together, that the public sector and the private sector, when they join together, can do more than either one can do alone. And we also believe that when we have a contract with the state of Maryland, that it's with the state of Maryland and not with any one person within it, and that we're all subject to the rules and contracts and regulations that each one of us has to abide by. So we entered in this with our eyes wide open and with full faith in the credit and the integrity of the Maryland state government.
And Natalie Sherman, when I talked to Doug Mayer, he mentioned that the State Center currently doesn't, the offices in State Center, because the state owns the land and owns the building, they're not paying rent, but they would be paying rent under this new proposal. What's your take on that? Is that something that's unusual? Is that an arrangement that other jurisdictions have entered into? Is that something that people should, you know, raise an eyebrow at? Is the state, giving this parcel? The critics say that basically they're going to give Caroline Moore's company this parcel of land, and then they're going to have to pay rent to be on it. How's that strike you?
So I think you could argue either way. The trade-off is taxes. Obviously, if it's a private building, then there are taxes that get paid, some degree of them. The rents are what it costs to build new construction, and we've seen new construction only happen near the harbor. And so when people sort of do that comparison, I think that context is important. I mean, they are high. It's new construction.
Let's hear one more clip from Doug Mayer, because I want to talk, Caroline Moore, to you about the actual what actually happened at the Board of Public Works a couple of weeks ago, where this stands in it from a legal standpoint.
What we did at the Board of Public Works, right, those leases were rescinded based on the action that took place 2 weeks ago. That very day, we filed suit asking for a declaratory judgment from a Baltimore City judge, which would essentially make a ruling that the developer no longer has a case on this issue and has to back away. And then we could move forward.
So, Caroline Moore, the governor's office is saying, you know, you're out of it now. And you're saying, no, you're not. You're in it now. So the vote was to rescind the leases, right, to stop the current contracts mm-hmm. that you have. Explain to us, you just have a minute or so left, explain to us what they're contending in their lawsuit. And do you intend to file a suit against the state in turn?
We intend to do whatever it takes to have the state honor their commitments to us and to the communities of West Baltimore that have been with us and really facilitating the state's vision that they laid out to do this grand transformation of what is a concrete wasteland into something that's very vibrant and brings economic opportunity and jobs to that community. And we're going to do whatever our attorneys and our community partners want us to do to fight that good fight.
And John Kyle, you're sticking with that plan. You're going to support the continuation of the current proposal rather than begin looking at a new idea.
We have no intention of wanting to start over and do another 10-year planning process. You know, if there need to be tweaks or changes to this current project, fine, let's discuss those and see if we can't work those out. We're happy to be party of that, but we've not been privileged to be party of that to date.
Well, I appreciate all of you coming by. It's a complicated issue. We'll stay on top of it. I appreciate your letting us know what's going on from your point of view. Thanks so much. Caroline Moore is the CEO of Acoustix, the real estate development company that's trying to develop State Center. Natalie Sherman covers real estate and economic development for the Baltimore Sun. And John Kyle is the president of the State Center Neighborhood Alliance. We've got a link to more on State Center on our website. Come to wypr.org/midday. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up, it's the Midday Thursday Theater Review. Stay with us.